is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network alongside former NFL general manager Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Got a great hour ahead. We'll get into plenty of NFL talk as well as college football with our friend Harry Gagnon, who's going to join us in about 15 minutes. But this is the start of 50 straight days of football, NFL and college, on our television screens every single day. And Michael, we on this program are all about having football done right. See what I did there?
There you go. I love it. I love it, Stormy. Yeah, football. Anytime football's on, it's done right. Right. Not so much at the games, but it is good. Be fun to watch. I mean, this is the best time of the year. Like I said, you get your favorite drink at Starbucks all the time. You get the ginger cookies. Everything's perfect. Trick or treat. What do you want to wear for trick or treat? What have you decided on your costume?
I'm always working, Michael. I don't dress up for Halloween anymore. Last year, I did end up being able to get home from my game on a Saturday and dressed up as an old lady. I just found as much makeup as I could to draw a bunch of wrinkles on myself and found a wig in the closet, which that's a weird thing that I just have a wig in the closet, but neither here nor there. But it's a fun time of year, obviously. And it's just great. I think that we are constantly talking about football at this point. And even some players who aren't on the field right now are still making headlines. And of course, I'm talking about Aaron Rodgers, Michael, who yesterday on the Pat McAfee show talked about the different ways that he's attacking his rehab. Quote, "There's nothing normal about how I'm attacking this rehab. The common practice is about 6 weeks in a boot, and I was in a shoe for 13 days. He said he wants to get after it as hard as he can for these first couple months, but also, quote, obviously, I'd like us to be alive and winning for that to even be in the conversation. And I think that's a big part of it. We'll kind of break this down from all different facets, but if he were to be able to, beat the odds in this case, and as the oldest player in the NFL, be able to come back from this significant injury and play this year, can Zach Wilson and can this group have you in a position where you're in it and where you are competing for a chance at the playoffs down the line?
Here's where I think we have to kind of slow it down a little bit. We'll watch Joe Burrow play this year. We've been watching Joe Burrow. And as bad as it looks, it's worse when you break down the numbers. It really is. It's worse when you break down the numbers, whether you break it down on first and 10, where he's thrown at 53% completion. He can't get the ball down the field. It's just horrible. He can't scramble. He can't move around. He's averaging 4.4 yards per pass attempt, the lowest in the league. I mean, the reason he's not rated the worst quarterback in football today is because we know he's better than what he's showing, but he's not good. And he's playing not with a torn calf. He's playing with a injured calf, if you will. To think that Rodgers can come back from an Achilles and use his lower body and plant and drive the ball, to me, when we watch Burrow with a calf, it seems far-fetched. He might play, but again, we're going to ask ourselves the question, how good can he play? I mean, Burrow has 3 rushes this year for 8 yards, right? Last year, he had over 270 yards rushing. He got 27 first downs last year running the football. He can't do it this year. He's got 1. So when you don't have your legs, how do you play the position at a high level at a quarterback, Stormy? I just don't see it. I mean, it's a great story and it's good for clicks. And I think it's a great motivating. And I think what Rodgers is trying to do is he's trying to basically motivate his team by his work ethic so that they keep him in the game. I think the key line in that sentence was, as long as we're in it, as long as we have a chance. And I think him doing what he's doing is trying to promote that.
Yeah, doing what he can from afar to keep the rest of the group motivated certainly makes a lot of sense. And he did talk a lot in that segment yesterday with McAfee about his mindset and about his intention and kind of speaking a lot of things into existence. I just think about the injury. I think about his age. It's something that typically takes 6 to 9 months to come back from to begin with. And yes, there are other cases where you can push that timeline and make it closer to 5 to 7, but it's still, it's just, it's really, really challenging injury to come back from. We don't see a lot of players who are able to have success doing it. And then even still, Michael, I go ahead and I pull up the Jets schedule. Right. And so down the line, let's say that he is able to be back those last couple games of the season. He played two really good defenses at the end of the year. And then playoffs are just going to get even more challenging if he were to be if he were to find a way to make himself available. So I don't think it's realistic. I like, as you said, that he's just trying to make it as appealing as possible for his team to try to play a little bit better here instead of being as checked out as we saw early in that last game.
I mean, we saw Deshaun Watson try to come back after a long layoff. How good did that look?
Yeah.
We see Joe Burrow trying to play with an injury. How good does that look? Playing quarterback in the National Football League is hard to do. It's really hard to do. But it's harder to do when you're not 100% healthy.
Yeah. Joe Burrow has two games now where he's passed for under 165 yards. Speaking of Deshaun Watson, Michael, I'm curious your thought on this whole process, because this past weekend, all signs, it seemed, pointed to Deshaun Watson playing this weekend against the Ravens. So people, I think, were very surprised, A, to see that he sat out, and then B, to learn later, hearing from Kevin Stefanski, that it was essentially Deshaun Watson's decision not to do that. We heard from Andrew Berry, general manager of the team, this morning, kind of clarifying that it was more of an organizational decision. Said he was having trouble getting the ball out. He said anybody who was watching pregame for that 18 minutes that he was out there could see in the throwing session he didn't have what it took to do his job that day. But we talked about news or noise earlier on in the program. So I was just curious for you with that whole situation. Has it just essentially been noise from that standpoint that the Browns expect him to return after the bye?
You would think so. I think that this is noise. I think he definitely is going to have to return. You know, I mean, everybody, you know, this injury list has kind of been confusing for you and for me.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not sure what we're going to get. I fully expect Watson to play in the game, but he didn't, you know. And so what constitutes, you know, one thing we do know after 4 weeks of the NFL season, if you're on that concussion list, you're probably not playing the next week. It doesn't matter what position we've yet to see a guy go from a concussion to playing. It's taken a time. So this one to me caught us off guard, really. He was added to the list on Friday, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I was saying that if you know, you gave me an option and I had to decide if I was going to see Deshaun Watson or Derek Carr this past week, my answer absolutely would have been Deshaun Watson. And yet we ended up having what we had play out there. Very interesting situation, but certainly we saw some positive things from Deshaun Watson the last time he was out there on the football field. So coming back from the bye, see if that offense can continue to build, because what we saw with DTR was not it. I think we all can very fairly say that, despite how he impressed in the preseason. Game speed in the NFL was a little bit different. How about, Michael, these last few minutes? I haven't heard a lot of shows yet really touch on the survivor options this week. And there are a number of big favorites that we talked about in hour one of the program today. Who, if you had to make a survivor pick this week, who would the team be that you wanted to back?
Well, I think you got to look at Detroit, right? I think Detroit's what, almost a 10, 9.5-point favorite. They've got to be in your consideration here. You know, I think that gives you, if you look there, most people probably would have circled Cincinnati here. I don't know if you can do that.
You can't.
You know, I think it's a 50-50. To me, the other one would be Miami. I think it's Detroit or Miami. Or if you want to go Buffalo here. But I think that's risky too. I think Detroit and Miami are your best plays. What do you think?
I go back and forth. Because it's a matter of, especially for people that are in Circa Survivor specifically, if you are still trying to have forward thinking about the teams that you might want on Thanksgiving. I know a lot of people are saving the Cowboys for Thanksgiving. You don't have to worry about the Cowboys this week against the 49ers. That's not a team anybody, I'm sure, is going to want to risk to take this week. But Detroit is also a potential Thanksgiving option. So do you want to have them off the table? I feel like if I were making a selection, that'd probably be the way I would go. Because my thought would be Dallas on Thanksgiving, but I don't know. This weekend's a little bit tricky this entire Survivor kind of has been, Michael, because it seems like usually we talk about trying not to outthink ourselves, but more often than not through 4 weeks, the obvious play hasn't been the obvious play. Last week, San Francisco ended up being that. The bulk of everybody took San Francisco, and that's the way that it panned out. The biggest loser, I want to say, this past week was the Steelers, right? And that was just that shellacking at Houston, right. But it's only like 40 or 50 people. But everybody took 49ers, and that was the right play. Previous weeks, it wasn't that way.
The Steelers won. I like the Steelers in the game. I initially had it as a Hall & Oates play. I was wrong. I put it back in play. When I watched the tape this morning, I was right on the Hall. It should have been a Hall & Oates play. Pittsburgh play with no real intensity. They were catching. They looked exhausted. That trip, the Sunday night game, losing the day, flying down. They did not look like the same physical defensive team. And then their offense was atrocious. I mean, Houston tried to keep them in the game. It's 13-0. They go for it on 4th-and-1. They could have settled for a field goal. They don't get it. They try to run fullback in the left flat. Don't get that. But Pittsburgh can't do anything with the ball to get them back in the game. If Pittsburgh drives down the field, makes it 13-7, they may get some momentum, but they never did in the game. And then, you know, at the end of the half, 45 seconds to go, they throw a simple curl and to Nico Collins, and he takes it 40 yards. They throw a simple slip screen to Collins, and he takes it 20, and now it's 16-0 at the half. They were not the same team. I think anybody who's talking about playing Pittsburgh against Baltimore, you're counting on Pittsburgh being a better version of themselves this week.
And it'd be hard to imagine that they're going to be that given some of the injuries that they have, including to their quarterback who had to leave the game in the third quarter on a sack this past weekend. I wonder how many people are going to be willing to take a shot with the Washington Commanders tomorrow night against the Bears. We hear that music, which means we have to hit the break. We're going to discuss this game in a moment with Harry Gagnon.
Yeah, let's do it.
In cartoon form. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our all-new NBA betting guide, which features up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, futures and year-long player props, best bets on player awards like Rookie of the Year, live betting strategies, plus strategy and advice on building your own NBA model from our senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel. Give yourself an edge this season and get the VSiN NBA betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Now, before we welcome in our great friend, Harry Gagnon, who is the host of the Against All Odds podcast, former Vegas sportsbook supervisor, we have our regular Thursday night football cartoon, and I'm told the theme is a Goldilocks of the week. Take a look.
Harry Locks here, and I'm hungry for a winner. Ugh, this line is too high. Ugh, this line is too low and has a hair in it. Bears? Commanders? I think I just lost my appetite, but I'll still take the Commanders -6. What the hell are you guys doing here? You're supposed to be playing the Commanders. Oh no, I forgot Daniel Snyder. Oh well, keep catching.
Oh, Harry, without fail. Always coming through, my guy. That blonde wig looked great on your cartoon character, by the way. Welcome in, friend.
Thanks, Tommy. It does look good on me, right? It does look good.
Beautiful. Stunning. But care to elaborate a little bit on why you trust back in the Commanders with the 6 in this spot?
Yeah, I'm going to take them here. Chicago has now lost 14 games in a row. Six of the last seven of these games have been by double digits. Washington played tough in Philly last week for the second straight year. 14 straight games, though, the Bears have given up 25 points or more. That's crazy. This team is a complete train wreck. They blew a 21-point lead in the second half last week. I don't know how they're up for this game. Not to mention, I think, what really is going to be the factor in this game is the Washington defensive line. They get to Fields. It's going to make him have a lot of problems, a lot of issues, like Denver did in the second half last week as well. I'm going to lay the points here. I love Washington as a dog, and I had him last week against the Eagles. I don't love him here as a favorite, but how in the world could anybody legitimately have the Bears at this point?
Yeah, I mean, and Sam Howell, look, Sam Howell played well against an Eagle defense last week, and this Bear team in the last 14 games has given up 33 points on average, and they've lost all these games. So I don't know how else we've got this alarm going off here.
Yeah, Michael, there's like a nation. It's the nationwide thing.
Wow.
So
and I have my ringer off, too.
The test is working.
My ringer
we
off,
know
too.
That much. The test is working.
Does that mean Washington covers, I guess? I don't know.
I think they just, if this was the gong show, I just got gonged. They didn't like my reasoning right there. I don't, you know, like to me, Washington, the most disappointing thing about Washington so far this year has been their defense. Their defense has been really bad. You know, they're giving up way too many yards per carry, rushing. They're one of the worst run defenses in football. They haven't been able to stop the pass when they needed to. That's why we were all surprised when Riverboat Ron didn't go for it on two, because he said his offense was exhausted, but his defense was atrocious. So they're going to have to play better. I mean, everybody talks about Trace Young coming back. So far, he's hit the quarterback four times in two games. You know, and Washington they've allowed 104 points in the last three games. I kind of think the over might be the play in this game. Two bad defense. Is this going to be, could be a reminiscent game of the Denver game?
Could be. Definitely could be.
Yeah, interesting standpoint. Yeah, looking at the last 3 weeks of points given up from that Commanders defense, though, is pretty frustrating to see, I imagine, if you're Ron Rivera and a defensive guy. Let's keep looking through this Sunday card, though, in the NFL. And you have some trust in taking the points with the Minnesota Vikings against the Kansas City Chiefs this week, despite the slow start for Minnesota. Why do you like them?
Yeah, you know, it was 5.5 yesterday, guys. Now I see it at 4. Very interesting. Look, we all know that Minnesota was 11-0 last season in one-score games. So far, all four games of the Vikings have been one-score games. So I think the 5.5 looked, if you can get 5.5, now maybe 4. I still like it. I think it looks juicy. Cousins leads the NFL in touchdown passes with 11-3 to Justin Jefferson. Defensively, guys, Michael, I really liked Danielle Hunter's been doing. He's got 5 sacks. But last week, I know it was against Carolina, but Harrison Smith versus Carolina last week in the second half was awesome. Blitzing, forcing the turnover that resulted in a scoop and score. Minnesota has lost by 6 or more points at home just one time in the last 13 games in Minneapolis. I haven't been that impressed with Kansas City. Only game at home hasn't thrown a pick in was against the Bears, as we just mentioned. I think Captain Kirk gets it done here. I like the points. I think even like a sprinkle on the money line with the Vikings. I know, like, again, it was against Carolina, but it got them going. It got them the first win. They could have really tanked on that game, too, after Cousins threw that 100-yard pick 6. They regrouped in the second half. I like what the Vikings did in that second half. And I think that takes in a lot of what they're going to do this week. I think they're going to be ready for the Chiefs.
And what would Harry be on a Wednesday show without a 10-point teaser? Like, really, is there anything better than a 10-point teaser, Harry?
There isn't. There really is. Listen, you can ask Sal the same question, Michael, and you know he's going to tell you he loves them. But I think, you know, I think this is a perfect situation for one, because you've got Miami. You tease them down to minus 11, down to minus 1 against the Giants. It was a complete nightmare what we saw from New York on Monday night. And Miami just can score at will. They didn't do it this past week against Buffalo, but we know what they did against Denver and the weeks before that. I think Miami at home definitely beats New York. New York has no offense whatsoever. I'm going to take Detroit. I'm going to take them at minus 9 to plus 1 against Carolina. Look, Detroit, fantastic job last week on Thursday against Green Bay. And in a situation like this, I know it's not really they really don't get to be a 9-point favorite hardly ever. So I think what they need to do is just pound the ball in the first half, get that 14-17 point lead, pull away from Carolina, who's not good from the very beginning, so you don't have to worry about it in the second half. So you mean Miami -1, Detroit +1, and in London. Jags looked good last week against Atlanta. No doubt about it. I'm sure they stayed in London. Bills are heading over there now after the Bills just beat Miami and put 48 on them. I think there's a situation where I don't love laying the 5.5 for the Bills here, guys, but I will take them +4.5 on a key number over the Jags. I'll take +4.5 with Josh Allen. So just in case something crazy happens and the Jags win by a field goal of 4, you're still getting 4.5 for the Bills. So that's Bills +4.5, Detroit +1, Miami -1 on a 10-point teaser.
Yeah, get after it. Here with OddsChart contributor, host of Against All Odds, the podcast, Harry Gagnon, joining us, also former Vegas sportsbook supervisor. Let's turn our attention for the last couple minutes here to college football. We do have the Red River rivalry coming up this weekend in the Cotton Bowl. Oklahoma getting 6.5 against Texas, total 60.5. And these are two undefeated, nationally ranked in the top 12 teams coming in here for Oklahoma. I'm sure there's a little bit of the revenge factor after the way they got torched last year. Mm-hmm. These games have typically been more closely contested, higher scoring battles than we saw last year. What's your expectation for this season?
Yeah, you know, last year was 49-0, totally got destroyed, Oklahoma, but they didn't have their UCF transfer quarterback, Dylan Gabriel, in that game. He's been excellent so far this season, 15 touchdowns, 2 picks, completing 75% of his passes. I know everybody is giving Sarkisian and the Longhorns all the love, and that's rightfully so. But, after beating Saban and Tuscaloosa and the way they've looked since, but I think the Sooners show up here. I'm going to take the 6.5. Sark as an underdog, nice play, like I said, in that game against Alabama. As a favorite here in this type of rivalry, and with Gabriel now playing, and Sooners look good so far this season, too. I'm taking Oklahoma with a 6.5.
And you like LSU this week, too, -6.5?
Yeah, you know, Michael, I do. I know Missouri's undefeated. They haven't played too many outstanding teams. Jaden Daniels, though, quarterback for LSU, has been spectacular last few weeks. 16 touchdowns, 2 interceptions all season, completing 73% of his passes. LSU's D, I know, is questionable, and it looked like that last week as they gave up 55 to Mississippi. But, you know, I think Brian Kelly gets his team in order here. I know they're laying 6.5 here. I think they just roll Missouri. Like I said, I know Missouri's undefeated here, but kind of a fake undefeated. LSU gets back in the winning column, and they do it big.
Appreciate the time, Harry. You're awesome. Don't work too hard, okay?
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Harry.
That's Harry Gagnon. Follow him on X at AAO Harry. And speaking to that, 55-49 final with LSU Ole Miss this past week, the total in this game 65. Both Missouri and LSU have been over teams. 4-1 for Missouri to the over. LSU, all 5 games have gone over. So some food for thought there. We're going to step aside, but when we return, it's Lombardi's list, Michael's top 5 and bottom 5 teams in the NFL.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay any day. Download the app. All you got to do is use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Now, something we do every Wednesday is our guy Michael compiles his rankings and does his top 5 and bottom 5 teams in the NFL. And Michael, I think that at this point in the season, where we're about at that quarter mark, we have a good, like, representative sample of where teams are really at. Yep. For anybody who hasn't joined us before, Michael, why don't you tell people just how these rankings are built? They're exclusively based on your numbers and kind of what's most important to that.
Well, the numbers are based on what transpires into winning. You know, what are the key components? What usually do you look at when a game is being decided? What are the key components, right? So what affects winning? You know, when you break down those categories, win points per possession, you know, red zone trip margin advantage, wins yards per play, you know, allows less than 50 or rushes and completions. So those kind of things that you look at, and when you do that, you kind of come up with a number. So I take all those statistics that the teams have played four games, throw them into a spreadsheet, and then it comes up with a power ranking. So you take bias out. Even on the quarterbacks, I take bias out because I use the rankings of the EPA of quarterbacks in terms of how they adjusted it based on time in the pocket and all those things. So I'm trying to remove bias from my decision making as best as possible. And then once you come up with that power ranking, you come up with a number, and then now you see how that number matches up against another team's number, and you go from there. So, and that's kind of what I've tried to do, and I've tried to do it in a sense where you come up with your own lines. So you have a sense of what exactly, where these teams are, and maybe you can find a slight advantage based on the numbers in the lines.
So with that, this week, your numbers, as you distributed things, came out with an adjusted top five, where the Buffalo Bills have leapfrogged the San Francisco 49ers from third in your ratings to now the top team in the National Football League. San Francisco stays at two, followed by the Kansas City Chiefs at three, the Dallas Cowboys at four, and the Baltimore Ravens, who were previously out of your rankings, have worked their way in, with the Dolphins coming off the loss to Buffalo now out of that top five.
Yeah, and you know what's shocking is Tampa and Detroit are 6-7. Now, who would have thunk that?
Wow.
Right? We saw Tampa get whooped by Philadelphia pretty handily, although it was an ugly game. Philly's not in the top because Philly's defensive numbers pull them way down. And then what I like to do too is when I'm going over this, Stormy, is I like to take this and then basically make another sheet, what I call my game matchup board. And then I can compare the numbers. Like, for example, okay, Chicago, Washington. Chicago is in the bottom quadrant from 24 to 32 in 13 of these categories. Washington is in the bottom quadrant of 10 of these categories. So that's telling you two bad teams are playing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Dallas is playing San Francisco. San Francisco's only in the bottom quadrant in one category. Dallas isn't in the bottom of any. And that's because San Francisco's in defensive sack per play is 28th. It's the only category that they're not strong in. And then you look at it that way, and then you can compare, like, where is the advantage? Who has the advantage? Is there more, you know, when you get that many, you know, when Chicago plays somebody that doesn't have it, you can understand why. But why this line is 6.5 when Washington has as many disadvantages as Chicago does, seems to me like the line's a little bit too far.
So then with your numbers, and I don't know if you have them right in front of you, Michael, but what did your system come out with for that Thursday night game? Like, what number did you end up getting? And same thing with San Francisco, Dallas. I'm curious, because we know that line is 3.5 right now favoring the 49ers, but where did you see it?
Well, I thought Washington, I had Washington slightly as a 4.66 favorite in the game. So, and then Dallas, San Francisco, I have as a 1.88 game. Mm. However, I worry my number on Dallas isn't very good because the level of competition to accumulate those numbers has not been good. The Jets, not a good team. The Patriots, not a good team.
The Giants, absolutely not a good team.
The Arizona Cardinals, not a good team. So, see, this is where you get in a little bit of trouble, right? Like, this is where when you look at the board, you say to yourself, maybe I don't have Dallas right. They haven't played anybody.
Well,
offensively.
But then I would counter that with San Francisco and their schedule. I mean, the Steelers haven't looked good, Michael, and that's the big blowout when they had week one. They also face the Giants and Arizona Cardinals. So similar from that standpoint. And then at the Rams. So is that the game that's the difference maker?
I think the Rams are undervalued.
Yeah.
I think the Rams are really, especially with Stafford, I think the Rams are undervalued. I think the Rams are, like, for example, the Rams are only bad in two categories. Now, the Eagles are not in the bottom of any. They're low in defensive sack per play. They're only 21 there. But they're not low. So this is like the Rams are minus 2-0 in this game. And I have this, I had this as a 2-point line. Yeah. It opened at 5.
I know when we
could see why, see, and that's why the line's moving. Now it's 4.
I know when we talked last week, Michael, when you were talking about the teams at the top, you said the degree of separation was very slim. For me, I agree. Like, and I have full bias in it. I think of the Buffalo Bills and San Francisco 49ers as the top two teams in the NFL right now. But from your standpoint, what, how minute is the separation between those two right now?
They're really close, right? They're really close between Buffalo, San Francisco, and Kansas City and Dallas, those four. Now, Baltimore is closer to Tampa, Detroit, and Seattle than they are to Kansas City, to Dallas.
Okay.
So it's almost like you break it up into brackets, right? And that's kind of how you look at it. Because Tampa all the way down to really to Minnesota, you know, or, you know, are not that low. I mean, one or two changes within their framework could alter their number quite a bit. So there's a cluster. Like people say, where's Miami? Well, has anybody seen Miami's numbers? I mean, Miami's in the bottom categories of six categories. Red zone defense, points per play, fourth quarter defense, third down defense, points per play defensively, defensive ranking overall. I mean, they're not good. Now, they're playing the Giants, who are in 11 of those categories. They're in the bottom. 11.
Speaking of...
So, you know, and that could give you, well, maybe you shouldn't play, you know, maybe it is too much numbers. It probably is in a normal NFL game, but I don't think Miami's normal.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the bottom, Michael, let's go to the bottom of the barrel. You already referenced the Bears, and they remain 32 of 32. But then... the New York Giants have cemented themselves as the second worst team in the league, according to your rankings, followed by the New York Jets, Carolina Panthers, and Pittsburgh Steelers, who have now worked their way into the bottom five as well. The Broncos, with their first win of the season, have clawed out of the bottom five.
Well, but Denver, Cincinnati, New England, and Las Vegas are... they're in the bottom
not
five as well. There is about 10 points separating okay. those 10 teams. Like there's not a lot of difference between here. Like there's a difference between Chicago and the Giants. They're at the bottom in their numerical grades, right? They're at the bottom. The Jets, Carolina, Pittsburgh, Las Vegas, New England, Cincinnati, Denver, and even New Orleans are all clustered together. Arizona, they're all clustered together. You could mix them up and match them around however you want to do it. But they're clustered together, whereas, you know, New York and Chicago are significantly lower. And Chicago, once again, has some of the lowest numbers you could see all over the place. As I said to you, you know, I mean, there's no strength on Chicago's team. I mean, their third down offense is 19th. That's the best ranking in determining winning points. Third down, they're 19th. Points per play offense, they're 21st. That's their low number. And in the fourth quarter, they're 20th mm-hmm. overall. Other than that, they are from 24 to 32. If you're the general manager of the Chicago Bears, this isn't just Eberflus isn't a good head coach. This is we're not very good. This is we're not very good. We don't have a quarterback. We're not good. You don't lose 14 in a row because you got a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if anybody,
and you don't give up 33 points, you don't give up 33 points a game over those 14 without being bad.
And for anybody who missed hour one, we broke down the thoughts from NBC Sports' Peter King, who suggested he wouldn't be surprised if Matt Eberflus ultimately was fired this week if they don't have a good enough performance against the Washington Commanders. And our guy Michael suggested a certain head coach and former Bear, Jim Harbaugh, who maybe could be an option down the line. So just some food for thought for you there. We got Why Not Wednesday coming up. Could these long shots make you say, why not?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NHL season is around the corner and our hockey betting experts are ready for all the action. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and you'll get our all-new NHL betting guide. That features previews for all 32 teams. We've got futures bets, awards picks, and season-long props. First period betting angles, Steve Mackinnon's power ratings, plus best bet articles 5 days a week once the season starts. This guide is a must-have. We've got key insights and data, whether you're an avid hockey bettor or somebody new to the sport. Give yourself an edge this season. Get the VSiN NHL betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. You can do so today at vsin.com/subscribe. Now, Michael, I have been looking. Our producer Caesar and Stephanie have been looking for some interesting long shot propositions that could make you kind of cock your head sideways and say, why not? And so that's what we're going to do here on this Why Not Wednesday, Michael. And we're going to start with my very own San Francisco 49ers. Okay. There is a number. I'm curious if you think it's high enough at 18-1 for the San Francisco 49ers to run the table and have an undefeated season. Could you consider a sprinkle on a Why Not Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I could see that.
You could.
I mean, I think to me, that's that's look, the way they're playing, I think anything's possible. Really. Hmm. You wouldn't do it? You don't think so?
I don't know, because their schedule, maybe. Okay, so here's how I could sell myself, maybe. I pulled up their schedule just now, and I feel like if they're able to get through these next two games, this number is going to go down, right? So they're against Dallas and at Cleveland, with the Browns coming off a bye and Deshaun Watson coming back. So that number is going to go down. I think the next tough stretch is week 12 and 13, when they have back-to-back road games at Seattle and at Philadelphia, although they do get the long week prepping for Philly. But again, those numbers will go down. Let's say they're undefeated through week 14. Then you could have the opportunity maybe to hedge on Christmas against the Ravens. I don't know. You know what? Maybe I think I just talked myself into it, Michael. I think I did. I just talked myself into it.
Well, now I talked myself out of it. Because if they're on Christmas, right? Like, let's just put that back up, Caesar. If at Christmas they're undefeated, like, I think they'll rest their guys. Because what's the biggest issue with San Francisco we always talk about? Health.
Absolutely.
I can't imagine them playing. If a game's meaningless at Washington or meaningless against the Rams, I can't see Kyle making a mistake and playing guys that he can't ill afford to lose.
But then I'm saying, if you're undefeated going into that game, Michael, you could probably buy off it for a profit if you wanted to bet Baltimore.
So I get that. Yeah,
I think maybe strategically that could.
Yeah, see, you think more in betting. I think more linear. You think more in betting. I got that. Yep.
That's why we're a dream team over here, Michael. We got both sides of it here. Let's stick with San Francisco, because Christian McCaffrey, I know we talked about the MVP market yesterday, and you said if you had $100, you'd split it between Josh Allen and Christian McCaffrey. But that 20-1, flat out, like, do you think that is reasonable to believe he could win the NFL MVP this year? We've got a great comparison from the last non-quarterback to go ahead and win league MVP in Adrian Peterson back in 2012. And the comps on numbers through four games, Christian McCaffrey's through the roof, exceeding what AP did early on in the season.
Yeah, I think the one thing that makes him different is he's really not a running back. And oh, by the way, he's really not a receiver. He is truly a dual-purpose back. And his impact on their offense, much like Tyreek Hill's impact on their offense, tilts their offense. They were not the same team until McCaffrey came around. Now, look, there's not a lot of guys that can do what McCaffrey does, but you get a guy with McCaffrey's talent and give it to a coach like Kyle Shanahan, all of a sudden things change. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you could make an argument in terms of if you were in a court, you could make a case for McCaffrey very easily. You could make a case for Tyreek Hill. But if you just vote off numbers, it's always hard. But the field, there's certain players that alter the scheme. There's certain players that make coaches sleep in their office on Tuesday night. McCaffrey, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jeff, those guys. You know, Miles Garrett, you know, Micah Parsons. So they do that. And this is one of those guys that does. And the way he delivers week in and week out is remarkable.
Yeah, and like, usually we talk about this being a quarterback award. And as much as I love Brock Purdy and he's been extremely efficient, just had one incompletion this past week, he's doing everything that he's being asked to do. But still, the most valuable piece of that offense into the success of the team, I think a lot of it goes through the different functionality that you can have with Christian McCaffrey. And third player ever with 600 yards from scrimmage and 7 touchdowns in 4 games, joining only Hall of Famers Jim Brown and Emmitt Smith, which I just think is pretty darn cool. We got some news from a press conference with Kenny Pickett a little bit ago that he says he's going to be ready to play, practicing with a big knee brace on his left knee. But with the Steelers taking on the Ravens this week at home as an underdog, could it make you want to say why not on a money line if Pickett's in there?
Well, look, I mean, when you do run the numbers on this game, the unders covered 11 straight games in this game. And when the line's 3 or more since 05, the underdog's 23-3-3. You know, you're usually giving me trends. Now you've made me go look at trends. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to play Pittsburgh. I don't want to recommend Pittsburgh. But all the numbers say you should, based on Tomlin, based on the history. But, you know, now you're telling me that Pickett's injured. He's not good. He hasn't been good when he's healthy. If he can't move around with their offensive line playing the way it is, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, Baltimore's number. Now, Baltimore's another team that I think you got to be really careful of in terms of overvaluating them. Because when you look at them, you know, they open up the season with Houston. When Houston, you know, Houston moved the ball on them, but they couldn't get it into the end zone. They played a really bad Cincinnati team. And then they played Cleveland without a quarterback. And the game they lost, Gardner Minshew was the quarterback. Think about that now. You're talking about a schedule that's really been favorable. Baltimore has benefited from it. Are we sure Baltimore's good? That's the question. By the way, going back to Cincinnati, there's video of Joe Burrow moving today at practice that actually looks way better than I've seen him look driving the football.
So do you
that number's gotten so low in Arizona, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, I liked the early numbers on it, but now that it's gotten down to, what are we at 2.5 yet, or is it still sitting there at 3 from when you last looked at it?
I think when we came on the air three today, AC. It was heading to 2.5. Okay. Now, that video might keep it from going there, but it was headed to 2.5.
Yeah, I see it at 3 right now, 3-point favorite in Arizona this weekend.
I mean, are we sure Baltimore's a 3-1 quality team? You know, they beat Cleveland last week with a backup quarter, with a rookie quarterback.
But so they're also doing it with injuries themselves, though. So that's what kind of evens it out a little. Right.
Yeah, they've been winning with a beat up team, which is credit to them, no question. But are we sure they're good though?
Yeah,
Lamar's great. We know that.
Well, speaking of Lamar Jackson, how about we turn our attention to Louisville and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish going head-to-head this weekend? Does a Louisville money line at plus 215 make you want to turn your head and say, hey, why not? Maybe it's a little bit of a letdown spot for Notre Dame after last weekend.
You'll get me on that one. I mean, who was talking me out of that one yesterday? Aaron was talking us out of that one. I think Notre Dame's going to breathe a sigh. Oh, I think Brohm's a really good coach, and I think Brohm can make magic. So you could talk me into that. Do I think it's going to hit? No, but I think the numbers are so good, you might want to take a play of.
Okay, I want to keep it in college football and that Red River rivalry coming up on Saturday. Oklahoma money line plus 210. Everybody is believing in Texas. They keep climbing up the AP rankings every week. They're a 6.5-point favorite. Could the Sooners get revenge in the Red River rivalry? I love alliteration.
I'm going to keep betting Texas until they prove against Texas until they prove me wrong.
All right.
Till the very end. I mean, I'm not going down without a fight, Stormy. I'm going to go all the way to the end, all the way to the end. I'm not buying Texas. I'm not.
Well, and I don't blame you.
How about this? Now, let me ask you this. Are you going to who you playing, Texas A&M, or are you going to play Texas this week or Alabama? What do you got on that one?
I don't have a bet in that game. I don't. But I have been liking what I've been seeing from Alabama. And Michael, forgive me. I forgot about our pro tip, and we need to give it out to the people real quick. And these are searchable.
Oh, go ahead.
By show, by and by sport. Oklahoma 5-0 against the spread. Their cover margin actually by 14 points so far through those five games, and it's just it's very valuable to know how teams perform, not just in the win loss column, but also those ATS values. I think that the spread is a secondary competition for teams when it comes to gambling, so just keep that in mind. But covering and cover margin for Oklahoma, I know it's been lesser competition to this point, Michael, but those numbers are good, and as an underdog, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. That's a wrap for us today on the Lombardi Line on DraftKings Network. Pablo Torre is coming up next, and Sharp Money here on VSiN. Keep it locked.